Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premiere Network on Saturday, January 13th, 2018. This is episode 1453. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Carbonite. Keep your business safe this year, protected from ransomware and hacker attacks with automatic cloud backup from Carbonite. Try it free at Carbonite.com. Don't forget to use the offer code TWIT to get two free bonus months if you decide to buy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, civil defense warnings. I know we're on in Hawaii, and I just want to say there, just in case the word hasn't gone out, but 1 hour ago, a false alarm went out all over Hawaii saying, this is just shocking. I'm seeing this on Twitter. Emergency alert, ballistic missile threat inbound to Hawaii. Seek immediate shelter. This is not a drill, except it was. Well, it wasn't a drill. It was a mistake. So no, it's okay. Calm. Horrible idea. Anyway, we're here to talk about tech when it works and more often when it doesn't work. And this is a good example. I'm sure we'll know more about this. I imagine it was an accidentally triggering. In a way, it's kind of a demonstration of how effective it was. It went out over televisions, went out over cell phones. It was the picture I'm looking at on Twitter is on an iPhone right on the front there. And, you know, you have those emergency alerts on all smartphones. There's Amber alerts on there. There's presidential alerts and everything in between. Wow. That is a massive failure of technology. And it's bad for a couple of reasons. A, because it gave a lot of people a little scare. And B, it's kind of that boy who cried wolf, right? Next time it happens, people might go, oh, yeah. Yeah, just hang loose, brah. It's okay. happy Saturday, everybody in Hawaii. Wow. Today, we'll talk about all kinds of technologies. And, of course, CES was this week. And, 8888, ask Leo's a phone number. I should say that right up front. If you want to get a hold of me, if you want to talk high tech, 888-827-5536. It's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada, including Hawaii. Outside that area, you can still call. You just use Skype. I did not go to CES this year, and I'm kind of glad I didn't. It's getting increasingly full of, and I'd noticed this for years, kind of insignificant junky stuff, which really looks like mostly like people desperate to find something interesting to do. And a lot of it is kind of mishmashy things like, how about a Game Boy, Nintendo, but remade by a Chinese company called Hyperkin. They want to sell the Ultra Game Boy for $100. See, do you get excited about that? All right. This is interesting from Samsung. They did, by the way, did not announce the Galaxy S9. They said, we're probably going to announce that in March. Not a coincidence that that's when the Mobile World Congress hits Barcelona end of March. So that's probably when we hear the S9. S9, some leaks make it sound like it's both exactly the same as the S8 and slightly different. New camera, for instance, that apparently somehow, even though it's a single lens, can do dual what they call f-stops, dual apertures. So when it's dim, it can go down to f1.5, and when it's bright, and go to F2.4. Samsung did announce a Bluetooth speaker that aims at your ears without headphones. But this, and this is the thing you see with the CES, the consumer, what used to be, they don't want you to call it this anymore, used to be the Consumer Electronics Show, now it's just CES, is that a lot of this stuff is like conceptual. Samsung has not announced pricing, availability, or really anything. It's just, and it didn't work all that well. A lot of robots that you won't be able to buy or want to buy. Sony showed its updated Aibo dog robot. Everybody said it was very cute for a robot. A foldable electric bike. A foldable electric wheelchair. Augmented reality motorcycle helmet. This was something that was a Kickstarter. In fact, a very successful, Indiegogo campaign in 2016, a couple of years ago. They raised $2.5 million for the Skully, S-K-U-L-L-Y, motorcycle helmet. With it had a rear view camera that would display in front of you, 180-degree view on your visor, turn-by-turn navigation, voice commands, phone calls, music. Never came out. Now a company called Phoenix AR, I guess they either they bought it or just the Skully folks with a new name because they're so embarrassed. Only $1,900 later this year. Don't get excited. Later this year. How about a headset you could wear on your head that will do an electronic reading of your brain, your EEG? Yeah. Lots of internet-connected appliances that no one will probably buy. Dishwashers, ovens, clothing washers, refrigerators. Actually, a hysterical demonstration of a LG refrigerator that you're supposed to be able to talk to, except it refused to respond during the keynote to the presenter. Nothing, ever. The whole keynote, nothing. not an impressive demonstration. And then there's the Kohler bathroom. Kohler, well-known name in faucets. They have faucets for the kitchen. A faucet, a capacitive touch faucet, kind of like the ones you see in airport bathrooms. But this one you could talk to as well, and you could say, give me one cup of water at 89 degrees, or, you know, that kind of thing. Or, hey, have a shower ready for me at 7:30 a.m. I want it 102 degrees, please. And while you're at it, play my playlist through the shower speakers. A toilet that heats the floor as well as the seat and plays music and has Amazon Echo. I don't know why you'd want to talk to your toilet. You can imagine the conversation, but all of this from Kohler. But I have to think about those airport bathrooms, you know, where you've been in them. You know, you go and you wave your hand at the faucet, it ignores you. Then you wave your hand at the soap, it ignores you. Then you get your hand just in the right position, the faucet comes on. But then you move it over to the soap, and now you got soap in your hand, and you can't get the faucet to turn on again. And then you're supposed to dry your hands, but the towel doesn't see your – it doesn't work, right? We've all been there. And if it doesn't work, it really doesn't work. So to kind of add insult to injury, because you know this Kohler bathroom, you're going to be very, it could potentially be very frustrating. The electricity went out for a couple of hours in the main hall on Wednesday, at CES. Irony of ironies, all of these electronic doodads, like the Kohler automated bathroom. Hello? Hello? Nothing. Nothing. The Kohler folks say, well, it'll still work like the old-fashioned way if it doesn't work the new way. Okay. We saw a Chinese phone maker named Vivo show a fingerprint reader that does work through the screen, what Apple said they couldn't do or decided not to do, but there's no name for the phone or price or sale date. You know, they just show. This is what they do. They show stuff. A bathtub from another toilet company, Toto, big Japanese company. Toto has a marble-covered tub that will simulate floating in space because a series of integrated jets, I'm reading CNET's story, integrated jets lift your feet off the floor of the tub and the surrounding LED lights add the perfect interstellar ambience, and it's a mere $19,000. This is why I didn't I wasn't sad that I didn't get to, and you shouldn't be sad. Now, there were some interesting new TV developments, including a TV so expensive they didn't tell you the price. But Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guru, will tell you all about that in a little bit. Meanwhile, let's take some calls. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. Hey, she's back from Ireland. Let's see if she has an Irish accent. Kim Schaffer back on the phones in her beautiful Irish wool cardigan.
That's the only thing I bought.
Nice, but it's gorgeous, and you bought it for the show because it's freezing in here.
Yeah, although now I'm getting a little warm.
Yeah.
It's working.
Yeah, that's awesome. Welcome home. Did you have a good time?
It was fantastic.
Yeah, I saw the pictures.
It was beautiful.
Yeah, it looked like it.
Did not want to come home.
Yeah. Cold and rainy, though, right?
Cold, a little bit rainy. Not,
oh, nice.
Not too terribly bad. It didn't, like, storm constantly. But we got a little drizzle. But it was just...
Welcome home.
It was an experience of a lifetime.
We missed you. It was nice to see Heather for, just a couple
of
shows, but it's great to have you back. Welcome home.
And welcome home to you.
And I think you've already been hard at work. Looks like we've got a lot of calls on the board. Who should I start with here?
Oh, the jet lag has got to me. I don't even understand this question. So
that's a good sign.
Keith in Orange County has a
You've
network.
Just given up, haven't you?
He said network attached storage device. I went, huh? I'll let Leo take care.
Hi, thank you. Thank you, Kim. Welcome home. Hi, Keith.
Leo, how are you?
I'm great.
You're probably lucky you didn't go to CES. You would have come back with a hell of a case of the flu.
Well, everybody does. Did you go?
No, I didn't go this year either.
A lot of people come back sick from CES because when you get a couple of 100,000 people together in small spaces and it poured rain and it was flooding and it sounded very unpleasant.
It did.
Yeah.
I've got a couple of Toshiba Conveo Home NAS, two terabyte NAS devices.
Okay.
On my network. And I have got the most curious problem. I've been in IT for 25 years, mostly networking stuff, and I cannot figure out why it's doing this. But none of our Windows computers, Windows 7 or Windows 10, will see the shared folders, the ones that you give passwords to.
Yeah.
But it will see the factory default public folder.
Interesting.
Now, here's the curious thing is, any Android device we've got, including Chromebooks, will see the shared folders.
Interesting. The password protected ones. Just not Windows.
Just not Windows.
Huh.
Now, it did work at one time, but when I had the Toshiba supplied installation software that was only available online, has pulled that software for the Conveo Homes. And so now I don't know if it's some crazy setup that the installation software installs cups or
are the drives, are the private drives encrypted?
No.
Because I know Toshiba, well, I don't know this for sure. In fact, I'm not familiar with this product, but I think Toshiba uses, I know Samsung does this with their little drives, proprietary encryption. Mm-hmm. And you have to install a kernel driver for it to work. But if they're not offering the software and they're still selling the Canvio, well, it can't possibly be required, or could it?
Well, when you call them, they'll tell you that if you can come up with your receipt, they're going to give you a full refund for the drive.
Oh, wow.
Now, so I suspect somebody else wrote that software for them.
Oh.
Pulled it from them, and they had to pull it from their website.
Yeah.
But I don't think the drives are encrypted because, like I said, you can see any of the public folders. You just can't see the share folders you create.
Right. Well, you wouldn't encrypt the public folders. You'd encrypt the private folders.
Private ones.
Yeah. So that, yet you can see it on Google's devices and Android devices.
Any Android tablet, you can see it on a Chromebook. You can see those devices.
And they're on the same Wi-Fi network that the Windows machines are on. Everything else is the same.
Everything else is the same.
Interesting puzzle. It might be that because a Chromebook is based on Linux, it might be that Do you know if it's using Samba or SMB or how it's doing the file sharing? Does it say anything about that?
Well, the Android devices, of course, say that they're looking at Samba.
Yeah, but they're doing a open source implementation of Samba, SMB, oh, yeah, right?
Yeah.
And Windows is doing the actual thing.
Right.
So it may be, I mean, I'm grasping at straws. I really don't know the answer to this, but I'm thinking it may be that they're doing a non-standard SMB or a SMB that doesn't work with Windows SMB, Samba.
Yeah.
It may be, so does it offer other file sharing protocols? Can you use other protocols?
No. And I was kind of curious. At one point, when I tried to force Windows 10 to see it through network, it came up with a curious message that said that the DNS server was not running.
Huh.
Which doesn't make any sense at all. Because I'm not trying to broadcast, DNS.
Have you tried using the static IP address of the server itself?
Yeah, when you do that, you're talking about like through a browser?
Yeah.
Well, then you get the HTML administration software.
But you could, you're right. Okay, that's right. And then, so that's good. And then can you map the drives using a static address instead of seeking? I presume the way you're mapping the drive is looking for it, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
No, that didn't work.
Yeah. The fact that Toshiba is offering your money back to all comers.
I had to drive one of the drives for like 4 years. getting money back for that.
Sounds like maybe they were using a non-standard way of doing this. So I should explain for people going with that. What are they talking about? This is what they call NAS or network attached storage. The idea that you put a hard drive on your network and it appears as if, you know, it's a local hard drive or a shared hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a nice way to back things up and so forth. I'm a big fan of, I've never used Toshiba's, and I don't know anybody who has. I'm a big fan of the Synologies.
Mm-hmm.
They're really nice network attached storage that seem to work in every possible environment. Might be time to upgrade, perhaps.
Well, I have a couple of LG cloud NAS devices, and they work great with all the Windows machines.
Yeah. It sounds to me like Toshiba did something proprietary. It really does.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's working. If it's working with a Linux box, which is what a Google or Android device is, and not working with Windows, it sounds like a non-standard implementation of Samba. That works with open source SMB. I'm just guessing. Wild guess.
An old boxy box. We'll see.
Oh, my gosh. You have a boxy?
I've got four of them. My wife used to work for D-Link.
Wow, those are the very cool looking cubes that had the one edge missing, so they stood on their point.
Yep,
and they were TV boxes. Those are cool. I really like those.
Yep.
I don't know. It sounds to me like it's. I don't know anybody who's ever used these, and so it sounds to me like it might be time to look at another device. You've had it 4 years, and something maybe more standard. Toshiba. You know, wouldn't surprise me if they did something kind of, hey, this is the Toshiba way. That's why you run their special drivers, their special software. And absent that software, yeah, maybe Windows doesn't like it too much. I don't have any answers. Somebody might listen, who's listening might, and the way to answer or help is 8888-ASK-LEO. Or go to our website. You can comment there. No charge, no sign up. TechGuyLabs.com. TechGuyLabs.com. Maybe with our group mind, we can help Keith out a little bit. Thank you, Keith. Coming up, Scott Wilkinson. He's back. Holes in his shoes from walking the floor at CES. The new TV tech coming up next. Well, the one thing I think CES still is very interesting for is TV, home theater. And our home theater guru, Scott Wilkinson, was there. Hi, Scott. You're still in Vegas.
I am still in Vegas. That's right. I'm a bitter ender. I stay till the show closes down.
Which was yesterday, I thought.
It was yesterday, yeah. But I drive in, so I didn't want to drive back all night. So
good.
I stayed
over. Take a little extra day, start recuperating.
Yeah, yeah.
How many miles did your pedometer register?
26.44.
You did a marathon.
That's right.
Good
55,845 steps.
Holy cow. Do you wear special? Well, we won't go into the details of what shoes you wear.
I wear sneakers and I have custom orthotics, and that really helps.
Yeah. Because the show floor, I mean, it's funny. You could tell the expensive booths because they have better carpeting.
Yes. And padding under the carpet.
And padding. Because they know.
Yes.
So, but all the big TV manufacturers are there. So last week you said, well, I'm embargoed. I can't tell you, but there's going to be a brand new exciting technology. I'm guessing that was micro LED.
You are correct, sir.
So, because we read about it, Samsung announced that was the, or was it Samsung, right?
Samsung, yeah.
And they had the wall, which was
a wall,
140 some inches
TV. 146 inch TV using this micro LED technology.
So what is it?
Okay, it's microscopic LEDs, literally a red one, a green one, and a blue one in a tight little triad, and that entire triad's about 1 millimeter across, and they're separated by about a millimeter, and
so this is a direct view. LCD TVs have like a shutter,
correct?
But OLED and plasma, you were looking at cells emitting light, and that's what this is basically. But it's an LED instead of an organic cell of
correct. It's an inorganic. Chemistry that's involved there. And the advantage over OLED and plasma is it can get a lot brighter.
Ah.
And like OLED and plasma, they can each individual LED, each individual pixel can be dimmed down to nothing, to zero. So you get perfect blacks. You get incredible brightness.
Good.
Leading to an amazing contrast ratio. And this 146-incher is 4K or UHD. And it's made of tiles. These tiny little LCDs are embedded in smaller tiles. And the TV is brought to your home in, you know, these little tiles, and it's assembled there. And so, because you couldn't get a 146-inch TV into most homes.
Yeah, that actually solves that problem. You used to have to take the roof off.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, and it looks great.
Oh, it looks phenomenal.
It solves some of the issues that OLEDs have, right? Because it doesn't, these colors don't dim over time.
They will over a long period of time. You know, LEDs are finite like anything else. Yeah. They'll degrade over time, but it's a long time, so I wouldn't worry about it.
I'm looking at your video that you shot on the show floor for avsforum.com.
Right, exactly.
That thing is huge.
It's huge.
It looks like a king-size bed behind you with a it's giant. Look at that.
Yeah, it's amazing. And even better, Samsung told me in no uncertain terms, it will actually be available to buy later this year.
Well, now, the 145-inch will be too expensive, right?
Way too expensive for most people, easily in the six figures.
Yeah.
But it's not just a technology demonstration.
Can I just buy one panel?
No, but you know, as I said, the pixel pitch, that is the distance between the pixels, is fixed. And so if you could assemble a smaller one or a larger one if you want it.
Okay.
But it would have a different resolution. It works out that this 146 is 4K.
Ah, now that's a catch.
You could do an 8K display, but it would be four times bigger.
Now I understand why this one's so big, because those micro LEDs aren't that micro.
Correct. And I heard some quantum dot people say, well, I'm not quite sure this really qualifies as real true micro LED. He sort of said, well, maybe it's mini LED.
So in order to get a 4K TV, you have to make a 146-inch set. You can't get 4K any smaller.
Right. Now, Samsung's working on that. They are working on making tiles that have the pixels closer together and smaller. So they were talking about maybe doing a 75-inch 4K, but it would require new, different tiles than this set uses.
So those will not be out maybe this year. But
not this year. Okay. The 146-inch will be. And it'll be expensive, no doubt about it.
Well, if they can get that at a decent price, you know, who wouldn't want 146-inch TV.
The 146-incher is really meant as a projector replacer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really is that, because it does so much better than any projector can in terms of brightness, in terms of black level. And you can watch it in a bright room. You can watch it with full of ambient light. Yeah. It's perfectly fine.
Yeah. All right. That's the micro LED story. It's Samsung only, right?
Samsung only, correct. Right. Other stories of importance, a lot of people inside and outside the TV business were talking about artificial intelligence, AI.
I know.
And in terms of TV, what that meant was One was user interface. Well, okay, that's fine. But more important to me is they're now starting to incorporate AI into the video processing. LG announced this, Sony, Samsung, others, so that it learns how it does object recognition in the video and optimizes that, and it does upscaling in this artificial intelligent way, such that it improves its performance over time. That was pretty exciting. That I thought that was very interesting. Of course, you mentioned the LG display roll-up.
You said the roll-up was cool.
It was. It was really cool. I have a video of that too. If you go to the homepage, I think it's the second story on the homepage right now, and you can see it roll up and down. It's really quite amazing. One cool thing about it is it rolls out and becomes a 16 by 9 TV, and then you can roll it back enough to make it a widescreen, a 2:35 display. A widescreen movie display. So depending on how much you roll it out or in, you can make it different aspect ratios.
See, I probably didn't get it because I saw pictures of them like rolling it up, putting it under their arm. That's not what that's for. This is like a screen that unrolls
out of a box.
Out of a box.
Yeah. And I had heard that they're thinking about doing a clear box so you could see the rolling mechanism, but they ended up not doing that.
Yeah.
They ended up making it opaque so you couldn't see it.
So this is a high-priced thing for people who don't want anybody to know they watch TV.
Well, it's actually this is a concept demo. This was not something that's going to become a product.
Oh.
This was from LG Display, which is the part of LG that makes panels, OLED and LCD panels, for LG Electronics, which makes the actual TVs, and other companies as well. And they also do a lot of research and development, and that's what this is part of.
So that's interesting. So this is an OLED, so it's a good looking TV.
Beautiful. Yeah, gorgeous.
But this isn't something they're planning to sell. I thought maybe more interesting is that you could then wrap it around things.
Well, and there is that. The LG booth, the LG Electronics booth, had what they called the OLED Canyon, which was you walked through this canyon of OLEDs, 246-some OLED TVs, and they were all bent to be curved in, either concave or convex to form this kind of undulating walls. And you walk through it, and it's like you're in a forest or, canyon. It was really something. It was really something.
Scott, we're out of time, but I'm sure there's many more things we could talk about, and we will over the weeks ahead. Scott Wilkinson is our home theater geek editor at avsforum.com, and he walked 26 miles around CES to bring you the best.
That's
Thank
right.
You. I'm glad, better you than me. I'm glad you won. Thank you, Scott. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, Scott, you poor fella.
Got a little bit of it. I'm hoping it doesn't get a lot worse.
I'm hoping for your sake it doesn't either.
Yeah.
So 8K. Anything to
8K,
say there?
8K was another thing. Samsung had it. LG Display had it. The 8K display from Samsung is also slated to become a real product later this year.
Wow.
I saw an application. I've said for a long time that 8K as a display for a TV is pointless. 4K is plenty good enough for any kind of screen size that you're going to sit at a normal distance from. But I did find a use case that makes me think that's what 8K is for. And that is, and you're not going to like it, auto stereoscopic 3D.
Ah, interesting. Yeah, because then you have dual 4K displays.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And essentially, basically, this company called Stream TV Networks does auto stereoscopic 3D, so no glasses. And they do it with a 2D image plus depth mapping. And they can allocate how many pixels are going to go to the 2D image and how many pixels are going to go to the depth map. And so with this 8K display, they made an announcement with a Chinese manufacturer or OEM called BOE. And we're going to see this probably this year in actual products. Basically it's 4K of resolution, of image resolution, and then 4K of depth information.
Yeah.
And it worked really well, much better than anything from them I've seen in the past. I had sort of given up interest in that company. And then I saw this and went, okay, my interest is revived.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it was great.
Cool. What else?
Let's see. Oh, the Sony 10,000 nit display.
That's really bright.
Really bright.
Hurt your eyes bright.
Well, you would think so. But it wasn't. The 10,000 nits really only come from very tiny areas of the image. And so they had pictures of cars and sunlight reflecting off the chrome on the car. And those little tiny little specular highlights were reaching 10,000 nits, which is what you see out in the real world.
Yeah, yeah. You do want those to hurt your eyes a little bit. They're like,
well,
wow, it's
as long as they're super tiny. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Interesting. They had it next to their Z9D, which is their flagship, top-of-the-line, brightest LCD. And the Z9D paled in comparison. It was really something.
Interesting. Yeah.
It was really something.
Yeah. Anything in sound?
Well, there were actually sound bars came a long way. There were a lot of sound of Dolby Atmos sound bars that were simulating immersive audio.
Right.
Sony had them. Samsung had them. Polk had one. TCL had one. So that soundbars have come a long way, and they're really starting to be pretty good.
Speaking of TCL, TCL and Hisense, the Chinese manufacturers had a big presence.
Oh yeah,
right? And is the quality good there?
Very good, very good. We gave them best of CES 2018 awards for the value proposition.
Oh, Hisense or
both of them, Hisense and TCL.
Wow,
they are making 65 inchers. With full array local dimming backlighting, Dolby Vision, Roku interface in the $600 range.
Wow.
Yeah.
So they're taking the crown from Vizio.
I think so in this particular case. Vizio wasn't here. They don't come to CES anymore.
Interesting. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Travis is next from Oklahoma. Hi, Travis.
Hello, how are you, Leo?
I'm great. How are you?
First-time caller, long-time listener.
Nice to have you.
On the podcast in my car.
Thank you.
So I enjoy that a lot.
Great.
I'm having troubles getting the Windows update for Meltdown.
Ah, yes. We should probably talk about that a little bit. This is that flaw that's in all modern computers. Every Intel chip since 1995, every AMD chip since about the same time frame, many, many ARM-based chips from Qualcomm and Samsung and other companies. In fact, there's only two devices I know of that aren't subject to this. So this is a major security flaw, and that's the Apple Watch and the Raspberry Pi. Those are simple, slow processors that don't do this thing called speculative execution. The latest update is that Apple and Microsoft are pushing out fixes for it that you absolutely should install. It's not while it is a serious flaw, it is not the kind of flaw that we've talked about before that lets a bad guy take over your machine. What the flaw does is if somebody can get code to execute on your machine, they can take a peek into your processor's cache. So if your processor is doing something else, they can maybe see the data that you're doing, like logins, passwords, maybe credit card numbers. The problem is they don't get to choose what they see. They just kind of get a glimpse of it. They have to parse through it, figure out what the heck they're seeing and make use of it. To our knowledge, there's not been anybody taking advantage of it, although it seems like it's ripe because for two reasons. One, most Android devices will not get patched just because they never get patched anyway. And two, Microsoft's had a heck of a time, to your question, putting their patches out. They stopped it entirely if you have an AMD-based machine because they were causing some of those machines to crash. And if do you have any antivirus software on your system?
I do. Malwarebytes.
Okay. So you got to make sure you update your antivirus. The many antiviruses do something that has long been kind of frowned on, but not prevented. They access the kernel, it's called, the deepest, darkest part of the operating system. And the fixes that are coming out from Microsoft would break that. In fact, If you don't have a fixed antivirus, and many were not fixed right away, Windows would crash, in some cases irrevocably. Like your machine would be no longer usable. You'd have to reinstall. So Microsoft said, whoa, hold on, just as they did with the AMD patch. And they told everybody, update your antivirus. And when you do, you have to set a registry key. This is a little kind of a funky mechanism, but you have to set a little flag on the system that says, okay, it's fixed now. You can install. And so there are a lot of systems that haven't been fixed or can't be fixed until that happens. Malwarebytes was one of the antiviruses that had the problem. Have you updated Malwarebytes?
Yeah, I have the most current version, and I also looked in the registry, and yeah. I have that key in there.
You see that. That's good. So that will unblock it. So how do you – oh, and the other thing – so in, the answer, by the way, in general is – what you need to do is you need to keep running updates till you're done. because there's one more update you may have to do. I had to do on all my Windows machines, and that was a BIOS update. Who makes the machine that you're using?
I actually built the computer myself.
So who makes the motherboard?
Asus.
Okay, so you need to go to the Asus site and make sure you've got the latest BIOS and that they put out a BIOS in the last week, because those BIOSes are kind of a prerequisite for the Windows operating system update to work. There okay. is, so how do you know you're not getting the update? You see it, but it's not installing?
Yeah, I've been checking for updates, and it hasn't been installing.
Okay. So, yeah, it's not the end of the world, right?
Yeah.
Because it is a difficult security flaw to take advantage of. Nevertheless, we now know that Intel's known about it since April of last year. So, it's been in every machine since 1995. So it is conceivable that somebody has written software to take advantage of it. Perhaps, most likely, I would say governmental agencies, spy agencies, that kind of thing. And it's most useful in that way because if you do a kind of a mass attack, you're going to get a whole lot of data back that you don't know what the heck it is. But if I'm trying to go after somebody, let's say the NSA has decided Travis is a threat. If I can get malware on his system, I'll know a little bit better what I'm getting back because I know it's from Travis's system and I kind of can keep an eye on what he's doing otherwise. So it's a lot more useful for a targeted attack than a broad attack. So unless you're under suspicion, which I'm sure you are not.
No.
Yeah. You probably don't have to, freak out about this. And just make sure you get the BIOS update, the antivirus update, and then keep, pounding Microsoft. They have started pushing out as of yesterday the AMD, some AMD chips, but not all AMD chips. It's one of those things where it's kind of chaotic right now. I have some machines that are fully updated. I'll put a link in the show notes. Microsoft has a little this is not user-friendly, but they have and I tweeted this earlier this week. They have a little PowerShell script that you can run that will tell you how patched you are. And once you get all the patches, it'll be green, 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 green all the way across it. It's a weird little script that you have to run, and it's have to open PowerShell, and you may not have it. Some machines don't have it installed, and so you may have to go out and get it, and then you have to download these scripts and then run them. So it's really not a user-friendly process. My friend Steve Gibson is writing something that he hopes will be much more user-friendly, and he should have that. I helped him test it a couple of days ago. He should have that out fairly soon. We'll let you know when he has that from grc.com. Meanwhile, don't freak. You're right to be aware. I'm so glad you're aware of it. You're right to be thinking about it. And just keep checking. And eventually you'll get all those updates.
Yeah, I kind of figured it was a targeted sort of attack. But I just wanted to...
Yeah, I mean, we haven't seen anything in the wild. Of course, if the NSA or CIA is using it, you wouldn't see it. You wouldn't know. But again, unless you're a target, you probably don't have to worry about it. I wouldn't not do it. I would absolutely run the patch. Now, there's a side effect And we're starting to see this as people apply the patches and the new benchmarks. It could slow your machine down depending on what you do with your machine. It can make a huge difference in performance. Epic Games, which has servers that run a very popular game called Fortnite, showed that that their servers were 2.5 times slower after. That's a lot, 250% slower after applying the patch. But it's going to vary depending on what you do. The kind of rule of thumb is if you do a lot of operating system calls like disk writes in between other stuff, that's when you see the biggest slowdown. So there's some programs that might cause a lot of slowdowns, programs that write to scratch files constantly, compilers. If people are developers, they might see I've seen some benchmarks that show that small chunks, when you read a lot of small chunks of data, you're going to really see a hit. So there's all sorts of problems with this. Don't be in a hurry to do it. Let them push it out to you. What I was doing, and I would encourage you to do, is check every day for updates. And since you built your own machine, now you're going to – that's a one more step that you're going to have to do, which is go to the motherboard manufacturer and get the latest update and check. That you're going to need to check regularly. Once you get that, you'll probably get the rest of it.
Okay.
All right? No cause for alarm. It's a serious flaw, mostly because it hits everybody. Everybody. But I think it's going to be okay. And as soon as Steve gets his little – tool out. Let me check grc.com, see if he's done it. I don't think he has. Yeah. As soon as he gets his little tool out, I will tell you. Otherwise, and I'll put this in the show notes, you can download the Microsoft script. They call it the speculation exploitation mitigation validation, something like that. Microsoft put out. And it does work. And I've run it on a bunch of machines, and in fact, it was helpful because I could see if that machine had the patch had been applied or not. And in many cases, I found out that I had to do a BIOS update first. You could Google speculation control validation PowerShell script; you'd probably find it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our Tech Guy podcast brought to you, as it has been for since almost the very, very beginning, by Carbonite Online Backup. You know, over the years, we've all evolved. Carbonite has evolved too. And it has become the leader in I want to say data, I don't even want to say backup, data protection for business. They have solutions for any size business. High availability backup solutions. It means you can get back up and running in seconds. See, at home, that's not as important. But in a business, every second of downtime means lost revenue. High availability solutions are often the only way for a business to go. They also have great migration solutions, so you're never locked into any particular cloud or server situation. You can move it around using Carbonite. And of course, these days, we were just talking about WannaCry, the WannaCry ransomware. Boy, you know, it's hard to remember, but 2017 was... Maybe it isn't hard to remember if you got bit by it. The worst year in history for ransomware. I bet you 2018 isn't going to be any better. Merck. Remember, Merck is the big pharmaceutical company? They took a quarterly loss of $300 million last year because of WannaCry. It's not the money you pay to the bad guy. It's the loss of data, the downtime. Why aren't they on Carbonite? Man, if I were one of their shareholders, I'd be kind of pounding the desk. Go to Carbonite.com and protect yourself from ransomware. You don't want hackers to get control of your system and demand money. And worse than that, like I said, the downtime. Even if you pay, you may never get your files back. I mean, can you trust a hacker?
Oh, yeah, I'll give you your files back if you give me money.
Yeah, right. Carbonite is automatic backup to the cloud. And by the way, their hybrid solutions are both local and cloud backup. And that's actually great for your network resources because it backs up fast locally, which means restores are fast as well. And then it backs up at night when the network is not busy, backs it up to the cloud. It's a perfect solution. Carbonite, it's the solution for any kind of business disaster. They're the data protection experts. Start your free trial today. You go to Carbonite.com for home or office, for Mac or PC. No credit card required. You can try it free. But I do ask one thing. Please use the offer code TWIT. That way you'll get two free bonus months if you decide to buy. You got to back it up to get it back. Do it right with the data protection experts. Carbonite. Protect your business data now. Go to Carbonite.com. Carbonite.com. Use the offer code TWIT for 2 months free with purchase. Well, hey, hey, hey. How are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, the gadgets and gizmos at CES, just ended in Las Vegas. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Our website, free to all, techguylabs.com. And you can, if I mention something and we're talking about something, James DeRuvo is writing this all down. He's going to put it up there, and you'll be able to, you don't have to remember anything. Just all the links will be up there, techguylabs.com. I'm glad our last caller was asking about the Spectre and Meltdown bugs and the mitigation and the flaws. He was using Malware Bytes, and they updated their antivirus January 4th. So they updated it pretty darn quick. As long as you have database 1.0.3624, you'll be able to receive the Microsoft patches. But it ain't over yet. In general, more patches are, I believe, still to come. Intel and AMD and the ARM manufacturers, all three processors, are vulnerable. And they've all said, we're going to do what they call microcode mitigation. That probably is what those, when you get a firmware update from your manufacturer, it's probably what's in there. Patching the processor. I think that they're going to come up maybe with better patches over time that don't have such a huge impact on performance. And this is the kind of the really the negative of this. You know, we've had bad security flaws before. In fact, they continue to find flaws in Intel processors. I saw the Intel management engine. There's yet another flaw in it that somebody discovered today or yesterday. So, you know, this is the way it is in the computer world. They're bugs. And adversaries, attackers, whether they're three-letter agencies or just, you know, run-of-the-mill blackmailers or thieves, are very well motivated these days and unfortunately very good at finding these flaws. And this particular flaw, this Meltdown and Spectre, that's a hard one to find. It's been around for 20 years, and it took them a while to find it and exploit it, but they did. They have. No one's done it in the wild, as we say. We haven't seen any real attacks, but that doesn't mean there won't be some because it's, you know, so general. Everybody's got it. If you've got a modern computer, you have it. You've got the problem, and you need the fix. The initial fixes that came out very, very, very quickly, I think were kind of quick, what we call in the business, quick and dirty. They solved the problem, but they didn't solve it elegantly or well, and they perhaps had more of a performance impact than people would like. And I think that over time we'll get more refined fixes. But ultimately, this is the bad news, it may require a processor redesign, and they may never get back the speed bump they got from this technique that they were using that was the source of the flaw. It's called speculative execution, the idea that a processor could guess ahead and as to what the program was about to do and prepare and start doing it ahead of time, which really speeds things up a lot. If you turn that off, you'll see a big dive in the performance of your computer. But there are ways to fix it. I think there are ways to fix it that don't cause such big performance drops. And maybe we can have newly designed processors that get the benefits of speculative execution without the downsides. But that may require a new processor. Yeah, a new computer. What? Oh, that's bad news, especially for people who just bought a computer. The other bad news came out of Intel, which is that anybody who has a processor from the fourth generation or earlier, that's Haswell or earlier, which is most of us, anything you bought in 2015 or earlier, anything that's less than 2 years old, I'm sorry, more than 2 years old, is going to see a much bigger speed degradation than the newer processors. And so we're just going to, you're just going to have to watch and see and cross your fingers and hope it doesn't bother you. I hate to even mention the slowdown only because you can cause this psychological, you know, perception of a slowdown when in fact you wouldn't think about it if you didn't know it ahead of time. There's a lot of headroom in our processors, and it's only during certain kinds of activities that you see the slowdowns. So we shall see. Nevertheless, well worth paying attention. As always, the advice is the same. It's not changed. When you get critical updates, apply them as quickly as you can. Although, there's always the risk, and we saw that risk for some people with AMD processors or kind of poorly written antivirus programs. There's always a risk that the fix is worse than the problem. Blue screens of death, things like that. Wow. 8888 Askley, if you want to talk about that or anything else on your mind, let's go back to the phones. Glenn's in Louisiana. Hello, Glenn. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. I missed Scott there. I actually wanted to see if I could get my question to both of you, but I'm going to try my best here. I'm considering buying an OLED screen, and basically the ones out in the market is the A1E from Sony, and then you have the different LGs.
Yes.
And so, you know, what I understand is they both pretty much from the panel, they're using exactly the same panel from LG displays. What makes a difference is in the processor that they had in it. Like Sony, I think, is using the X1 Extreme. And LG, I think, only calls it a quad-core processor. Which one, I mean, for future-proofing, which of those two is more powerful? And the reason I ask that is there's a lot that manufacturers do with the processor in terms of tone mapping, HDR, white color gamut.
Yeah.
And also the OS, like, you know, LG has been using WebOS, and they went from 3.0 from last 2 years ago to 3.5. But they do not update it, you know, the B6s or the 6 models to the 17 models with the OS. So let's say from a standpoint of updating apps, you know, when updates come for your different apps in the TV, which one will be easier to update?
Yeah. So Scott has said many times that he likes the Sonys a lot, but the LG is pretty consistently the winner in terms of how it looks. It won the last HDTV shootout. The LG's won. I bought an LG on Scott's recommendation.
Right.
So I think it's very likely that the differences between the two, and you're right, the DSP, the processor they put in, can make a difference, but you can't judge it by the core or the clock speed. It's really the software that the processor is running. That can make a difference, and it may be the difference is more a matter of taste, that LGs look one way and Sonys look another way, than there's actually any, I think, significant difference in capabilities. But the future-proofing question, that's another question entirely, and I don't know if there's a good answer for that because the future is murky. We don't know what the future is going to hold. Who will hold up better, you know, 3-4 years out? I don't know. And one of the things we don't know is what TV technology will happen in 3 or 4 years. It may be you want a new TV anyway by then because micro OLED is the big thing or whatever, right? And we can't predict.
And the reason is this is going to be probably the most expensive TV.
Yes, it is.
I ever bought. So I'm not going to be looking to replace this TV anytime soon.
Yeah, the only concern I have is that Sony has not been doing well in the TV business, and we've seen the other Japanese companies, Panasonic, Toshiba, kind of falter, and the Korean companies seem to be holding strong. And LG, of course, is a Korean company, but that's more about business than it is about technology. I would say from a technological viewpoint, it's a matter of taste, and I wouldn't worry too much. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. baby, you can drive my car. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo, the phone number. Line 3, Mike, Woodland Hills, California. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, hey, Leo. I
Welcome.
Have a problem.
Yes, sir.
My IP address has been compromised. Every time I try to log on to Coinbase or one other crypto exchange, the one crypto exchange said that showed me exactly where another IP address was attached to mine. They said I had two, and I looked up the one that wasn't mine, and it was a real corrupt one. So how do I get rid of it? It only logs on to my IP address when I'm trying to do something financial.
Well, you can't have two IP addresses, so
This one was logged on exactly next to mine. I had my IP address and his IP address, and I looked up his IP address, and he's one of the most corrupt ones on the website.
Yeah. I'm wondering what the message from Coinbase was.
I can't remember.
Yeah. So here's the deal. Your IP address you don't own your IP address. The internet service provider owns the IP address. They're granted a block of internet addresses. This is that unique, kind of like your phone. It's really actually a lot like your phone number, that unique number that your internet service has, and you have numbers of computers sharing it because you have a router. But to the outside world, you look like that one number. All the computers on your internal network look like that one number, and you can only have one number. However, it's possible that number was owned by somebody sketchy in the past. That's not at all unusual, and it's conceivable that's what they're saying is, well, we don't like your IP. Are they saying you have you've seen two different IP addresses?
Exactly. One is right next to mine. Mine is first, and his comes right after mine.
Sequentially, numerically?
They're not the same. His ends in the last three numbers are different.
But the rest of them, the first, so you have what's called a dotted quad. You have four numbers separated by dots. The first three numbers in your address and his address are the same, but the last three numbers are different.
Correct.
And his is one off of yours?
I lost the paper. I wrote it down.
Okay, that's fine. So I think it is sometimes internet service providers will allow you multiple IP addresses for a network that you can normally have to buy that. I think you have to call your internet service provider, log on to Coinbase and do screenshots is what you're going to need to do of the error messages and the numbers so that you can tell your internet service provider, why am I showing up as two internet addresses? I don't frankly even understand what that means. When you log into a website, you log in with one and exactly one. You can't log in with two. You know, when you show up on a web address, you have a unique number. It's yours and only yours. I don't know where they'd be seeing a second number unless it's possible. And again, because you don't have the error message, it's hard for me to crystal ball this. But it's possible that you've logged into Coinbase with that same account in the past from a different IP address. Not yours, perhaps. So first thing I would do is change your Coinbase password. In case, you know, somebody's compromised your Coinbase account, maybe what they're telling you can't log in with more than one address. So maybe what they're telling you is, you know, 2 hours ago you logged in with this other address, and we don't like that address. Or maybe, you know, are you logging in with two different devices at the same time? I don't know. And frankly, they shouldn't be blocking by IP address anyway, because IP addresses are fungible. They don't. Your IP address can change at any time unless you specifically pay for a static IP address. It's assigned to you in general from a pool of numbers that your internet service provider owns. So if somebody's up to no good, with an IP address that's owned by your internet service provider, and you're showing up by that address, well, the first thing I do is call the internet service provider and see if you can get some clarity from them. However, what I would probably want to do is check the security of your Coinbase account, because I'm guessing it's more likely what they're saying is you've logged in from two different addresses and one of them's shady, and that sounds like maybe you've been compromised. You can go to your settings and Coinbase and go to the security settings and see what addresses have been used to access Coinbase.com. A lot of sites do this. Gmail does this as well. You know, who's... Facebook does this as well. What addresses have been used? And see if one of those numbers is on there. If that's the case, even if not, this would be a good time to change your password on Coinbase. In fact, Scooter X, who's on his Coinbase account right now, says at the same place in the security settings on Coinbase, you can choose which devices are allowed to access your account. And they say right there, quote, please let us know if any of these records appear out of the ordinary. As you might imagine, as the value of Bitcoin has gone up, Coinbase is a Bitcoin exchange. As the value of Bitcoin has gone up, there's a lot of incentive to steal people's wallets. And frankly, this would be a good argument for being very careful with cryptocurrencies in general. If you don't know what you're doing, you're probably, you know, it's you're at risk. It's that old line from Rounders. What was that? If you look to the left of you and look to the right of you at your poker table, and if you don't see the fish, then you're the fish. Got to be a little careful when you're using that Coinbase. More of your calls coming up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. He's been everywhere, man. He's Johnny Jett, our traveling guru from johnnyjett.com. And just, you know, as an example, he's home now, Manhattan Beach, but he's going to hit the road as soon as this is over.
Yes.
And you won't tell us where you're going, will you?
No, it's only a short road trip.
We were talking
But then
about,
I will be in New York City this week.
Oh, fun.
For a night.
We were talking about traveling with your kid. How old is Jack now?
He's 15 months.
So you and Natalie and Jack go everywhere if possible. And right. I thought, but you guys are pretty good about getting this all together. You probably world class. I know the more you travel, the better it gets at packing and getting ready and getting out the door. And traveling for with sure. A kid used to be a bear, I know, for me, but I guess you probably get it all down. You probably have special bags and everything.
Please.
What age can he travel unaccompanied? He's too young now.
Yeah, unaccompanied. It depends on the airline, but I'm pretty sure it's 14. Some might be 15 or even 16. So just Google the airline and put in unaccompanied minor. What's the age limit? Okay. But I was, the good thing about having an unaccompanied minor on the plane is that if there is one, the chances of that plane being canceled are slim to none.
Really?
Because airlines do not want to take the risk. And also, when you have an unaccompanied minor, you want to make sure it's a nonstop flight. You don't want to make a connection anywhere. And if by chance you have to make a connection, I don't even know if they'll even allow the connection, do it early in the morning, make the first flight out, because those are least likely to be delayed or canceled.
This seems like there are more flights canceled now than there used to be. Am I wrong?
I have to look at the stats, but I don't think you're wrong. And that's because a couple of years ago, they came out with a new tarmac rule. If you remember Valentine's Day a few years ago, yes. JetBlue had this story where 9 hours people were in the plane without food. And it was hell.
Yeah.
And so then they came up with these laws where you can't have passengers on a plane for more than 3 hours. And if they do, the airlines get fined $27,500 per person. So that's why when there's a big storm coming up, you'll see the airlines proactively canceling away in advance, which I like, because
why don't they just not push? Why do they push? I mean, if they didn't push away from the gate, they wouldn't get fined.
That's a good question. I do not know, but I would think that, you know, once they push, they need the gates. I mean, the planes are always coming in, so they're on a tight schedule.
Yeah.
I mean, you land at LAX and American Airlines, and a lot of times you're circling around the tarmac because they're waiting for a gate to open. They overschedule.
You never want to get there early. I've learned.
On the ground.
Yeah, but when they say we're going to get there early, usually that means we're going to have to wait for the gate.
Yeah, and it is frustrating, especially if you have a connection to make or whatever.
So Johnny gives us every week a website and an app to help us travel better. What's your site today?
Yeah. So actually, here's the app. I actually read about it in the Miami Herald.
Okay.
It's called Blind Travelers Can Get Around an Airport More Easily with a New App. And I get a lot of questions from your viewers, and a lot of them are blind.
Our listeners, that's right.
Yes. Listeners, yeah. And so this one is interesting. It's from the Nearby Explorer app, and they have a free function called Indoor Explorer. Oh. And I went into the it's only on iOS, and I went into the app. And there's two different apps. There's one for $79 and there's one for free. Wow. I can't imagine they're charging $79 for this because it was developed by the American Printing House for the Blind.
APH,
So I would think it's free because there's two versions. So, and right now they're only road testing in the Louisville airport. But it's really amazing stuff because you think about it, a lot of times blind people, they only go from the ticket counter to the gate. They don't know what's in between. And this app, you know, they use these beacons. They, you know, the future of travel and stuff, I think everywhere, they're going to have these beacons all around airports and streets. And it's going to actually give an audio version of the app saying, you know, right here is a Starbucks. You're passing a Starbucks or here's the, you know, the ticket counter, whatever gate number it is. And they don't have to rely on the airport personnel or the kindness of strangers. And one person was being interviewed who was stuck in an airport at 4:30 in the morning, and there was no one around, and they didn't know what to do. So
terrible.
I really hope this expands rapidly because, you know, this is something that airports have been overlooking for a long time.
So they say the Indoor Explorer is being included in both the paid and the free version of the app. So that's okay. Really, the paid version might be more expensive because it doesn't need to be online. It's got all the maps built in.
$79 is a lot for an app.
Yeah.
Yeah, my eyes almost came out.
All right, what else?
My website of the week, it's been around for a long time. And I was just in Hawaii last week, and a lot of people like to surf. And when I go to Hawaii, that's the only place I like to surf is in Hawaii because the water is shallow, warm, and clear. But this one is called Surfline.com. I'm sure you heard of it because it's been around since 1985, and they were the first.
I think this is the original one.
The first ones to have live surf cams.
I remember seeing this in the 90s.
Yeah, 85 it came out.
Wow.
And if that's even possible, this has been around since 85.
I believe.
And yeah. And so they have a premium version, which you don't need to get, but because it gave you a 17-day surf forecast. But the free version gives you live webcams from all over the world, and you know the surf information. The wind, the temp, water temp. I mean, you can look for Iceland even. I mean, who's going to surf in Iceland? But it's everywhere.
Or Rockaway Beach, but there it is.
Yeah, I love it. If you're like an armchair traveler or if you just want to if you're thinking about traveling somewhere, you can check out the waves.
Just looking at them, yeah, who needs to surf? I'm just going to look at them, pretend I'm at the beach. That's awesome.
Yeah. And it's all around the world. They have 200 live cameras.
Surfline.com.
Yes.
Go to the beach without leaving home.
Yep. And I think we're out of time because you got to do a little promo.
But if you will go to JohnnyJet.com, my friends, you will find Johnny and his articles and everything he does. Follow him on Instagram for great travel pictures and on Twitter for not just information, but follow his lists because he has every airline, every traveler, your Twitter lists are a wonderful resource. Thank you, Johnny.
Thank you. Safe travels. Have a great week.
We'll see you next week. Johnny.
Take care.
.com. More of your calls still to come. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Dan on the line from Corona, California. Hi, Dan. Hello, Dan. You're on the air, my friend. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hey.
Hey, I have AT&T service, and I just got a new router that's a single band, and I have a TP-Link, and I'm not getting great service with this router through AT&T, so I want to try to use the TP-Link and do AT&T as a pass-through or something like that.
Yeah, they call it bridge mode.
Okay.
So the AT&T DSL comes with a DSL modem, but as is often the case nowadays with internet service providers, I think they do it as a convenience. They often bundle a Wi-Fi router into the modem. But you don't want to use that router because it's not a very good router. And you've got this nice TP-Link. Did you get the C7? Which one are you using?
Actually, it's the AC1750.
Okay. So that means it will handle it's dual band, which is nice.
It's dual band, yeah.
And you'll get more speed, and it may work better. Probably will work better for you. Often the equipment that comes from the ISP isn't the best. So what you need to do is, I'm sure they gave you a address that you can open up in your browser to set the settings for that router. Did they?
For the TP-Link?
No, the AT&T.
Yes, they do.
Okay.
I have it up right now.
Yeah. So you go in there, and what you're going to do, and I wish I could tell you the exact language they use, but in effect, you want to turn off routing. You want, in fact, what I would suggest is turn off, does it have Wi-Fi as well?
Yeah.
Yeah. Turn off the radios, turn off everything. So you'll have to go through the settings. You're going to say, don't do DHCP. Now, sometimes you can't do that in one of these ISP-provided routers. So then, in that case, you leave it on there. You do definitely want to turn off the Wi-Fi radio because that'll interfere with your TP-Link router.
Right.
But then if you can't turn it off in the AT&T router, you can turn it off. You can put the TP-Link router into bridge mode. It will probably be called bridge mode there. And that means it's just going to pass through the routing. It's okay to let the ISP modem do the routing. You just don't want its Wi-Fi to be working.
Right.
So you can, sometimes it says turn off NAT. Sometimes it says turn off, NAT is network address translation. Sometimes it says turn off DHCP. Sometimes it just says go into bridge mode. I'm pretty sure the TP-Link has a bridge mode setting, so it'll be a little easier to find. So you have your choice. I know that with some ISP's modems, they say, no, you got to use our router. Okay, fine. In that case, turn off the Wi-Fi radio only and put the TP-Link into bridge mode. The idea being you don't want two routers and you don't want two Wi-Fi access points. You want one of each. But it's okay if it's okay if the ISP's is the router.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does make sense.
It might say pass-through mode. I mean, I don't know what the language is because nobody agrees on what it is. But that's, typically geeks will call it bridge mode.
But basically, I want to turn off the radio component of the...
For sure that. For sure that. If you can find a setting to turn off network address translation or DHCP or routing or put it in bridge mode, turn that off and then use the TP-Link for everything. If not, because in other words, what you're doing is dumbing down that box from AT&T to just be a DSL modem. That's all it is now.
Right.
If not, then turn off the routing in the TP-Link. You don't want – technically you can have what they call dual NAT or both of them acting as a router, but it can cause confusion and problems and sometimes speed issues. So it's best to only have one of them doing that.
Yeah, and I don't like this router. I just got it. The modem. I just got it yesterday, and it's terrible. I don't know what AT&T is kind of doing.
Well, that's not unusual.
Yeah.
Well, somebody in the chat room says I hassled this with AT&T. Whiskey says I hassled this with AT&T and was never able to find a bridge mode setting. I dropped it and went with another ISP. You don't need to do that, but it may be that you can't change that router. I know I have a Comcast box that I can't turn off routing, so I just have to use my arrows in bridge mode.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Have
Very
fun.
Good. Thank
My
you
pleasure.
So much. Have great, a great day.
My pleasure. Take care. Yeah, the TP-Link's nice. It's a Chinese company. Makes, I think, very good quality and very inexpensive networking devices of all kinds. I've used their Powerline networking, too. Recommended it. It's a really good way to extend your network through the power lines in your walls. It works, which sounds like a bad idea, but it actually works surprisingly well. Jonathan in Georgia, you have one of those Toshiba Canvios?
No, I do not, but I have the Linux boxes and Windows boxes, and I ran into a similar problem before with SMB version 1.
Yep.
And Crater Update They dropped the
They did, because that was the big security flaw. I remember that. SMB1, that's what happened. You nailed it. SMB1 was the flaw that the Mirai bot used. It was discovered by the NSA, and it was a real security problem, so Microsoft took it out. And they use SMB2 now, right?
Yeah, and I got this information from your show called Security Now.
You bet. Yep.
And what it is, there's a checkbox in Features in Windows 10 where you can re-enable it.
Oh, really? I'm not sure I'd advocate that, since it is a security flaw.
Right.
But you're right. It may be the only way to use, since that's a four-year-old NAS, it may well depend on SMB1. You may have nailed it.
Yeah, thank you.
I appreciate it. And thank you for listening to our Security Now show, Jonathan.
All right. Bye.
So you learned something, didn't you? Yeah, that actually makes a lot of sense. What was the SMB flaw? Wasn't that the one that the NSA... First of all, it's out of date. It's really old. But wasn't that the one that the NSA discovered a hack, and then the hack was leaked? The NSA exploits were leaked. And I'm drawing this from my flawed memory. And then I'm pretty sure it was Mirai. I think that was the bot that used this. Was it Mirai or another one? Maybe it was another one. There was an attack. No, it wasn't Mirai. It was something more recent. And so Microsoft said, well, let's just take that out. let's just remove that. But it could cause networking issues with older networking devices that expect that older form of SMB. Samba or SMB is Microsoft's old LAN manager protocol. It is a very old protocol. Goes back a long way for sharing hard drives. 8888-ASK-LEO. I'll tell you what. I'll put a link to that information. Maybe Keith is still listening, but if not, we'll put it up at the website, techguylabs.com. That's where we put everything we talk about on the show. Links to all the services, all the stories, all the questions, all the answers, and even audio and video of the show after the fact. So you can listen at your leisure, techguylabs.com. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number, another hour to come. The Tech Guy Radio Extravaganza. Stick around. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, augmented reality, giant TVs, surround sound, anything digital, anything with a chip in it. 888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. 888-827-5536. You can, of course, get anything you need from the show. If you're listening and you want to write something down, don't worry about it. You don't have to. We do it for you. That's at techguylabs.com. The website is free. No sign up. And you can even leave comments there, which is very helpful. If, like our last caller, like Jonathan, you said, I think I know what's going on with Keith's hard drive, you can leave that there, and that's very helpful. Techguylabs.com. And there's also a link to the chat room there, irc.twit.tv. Started the show with a bang, almost. Shortly before the show went on this morning, the residents of Hawaii got emergency alerts on their phone. These are fake, false, not true. It was an error, but it said that a ballistic missile was headed to Hawaii, and this is not a drill. Holy cow. Can you imagine waking up to that? Oh, my goodness. That's terrifying. Terrifying. What would you do? I mean, I don't know what you would do, but where are you going to go? What are you going to run away? Anyway, it was an error. I don't know how that happened, but it did. It was, I think, a good example, kind of a test of a system now that we really all have. Used to be, remember maybe you're not old enough to remember the fire whistles or the tsunami alerts or every firehouse in town used to have a big, we called it when I was a kid, the noon whistle, because they'd set it off at noon every day just to test it. Big alarm, like an air raid alert alarm. And I think a lot of those don't work anymore. Although, weren't they all hacked? Was it Austin? I think it was Austin, Texas. Somebody recently hacked the air raid sirens, and they all went off at once. Maybe this is a hack. What it demonstrated, though, is that this new system that we really have is of text messages is probably pretty effective. It was Dallas, not Austin. Dallas. Every phone has an emergency alert system. You've probably seen it. They have amber alerts for missing kids. They have alerts for serious storm conditions. They have alerts. There's even a presidential alert that's been in place for the last few years that can be triggered by the president. And at least on most of the phones I've used, you can turn off these alerts, all but the presidential alert, the highest level alert. You can't turn it off. And I would guess a ballistic missile heading toward Hawaii would count as, one of those high-level alerts. It was on TV screens. Of course, I'm sure radio stations played that sound, that awful sound you hear as a test once a week that alerts you to this. But it was fake. It wasn't real. If you go on Twitter, you can see bunches of examples. What a terrifying thing to wake up to. The FCC, of course, says, we're going to look into this. They take this stuff extremely seriously, as they should. Who set that off? Was it an accident? Or what? 8 a.m. Hawaii Standard Time. What a terrible way to wake up. It was probably, according to local media, maybe a human error. Not something good to see. But if I'm going to give you a silver lining, it got people's attention. I think if you live in Hawaii, you pay more attention because of tsunami possibilities, right? Things like that, storms. 8888 Ask Leo. And I know we have lots of listeners in Hawaii, and I hope you didn't have a heart attack when you got up at 8 and saw that on your phone. Holy cow. Manny, Mont Carmel, California, Pennsylvania. I'm sorry. I'm Manny, Leo Laporte.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Leo. It's been, this is like my fourth time talking to you. And
welcome back.
Thank you I just want to thank you for a job well done. Every now and then I'll tune into your Twit TV there, which I'm doing today.
Our podcast. And
it's pretty awesome, the work that you guys do. After you guys go off the air, I sometimes stay on and just watch you guys talk and chit-chat here and there, which I think is pretty
it's
cool.
It's basically 24 hours of technology talk.
like I said, that's pretty
if you're
awesome.
Into that stuff, it's heaven, right? If you're not, if you're a long-suffering spouse, it's about your worst nightmare.
But listen, I just called to ask you about the VPNs. I kind of twiddle around with your website there, but I couldn't find any real VPN product that I can use, something that's a little bit reliable.
You have to be careful because a VPN stands for Virtual Private Network. Most of us first became aware of VPNs when we used them for work. You have in the early days, pre kind of internet, you might have a work computer system that you could dial into from home and then use the computers at work. And in order to make that secure and safe, you did it through a virtual private network. In those days, until fairly recently, you had to install special software from Cisco or somebody like it and run the software and make the call. But it would be completely secure. And some bright fella said, hey, this would be a good way to surf if you weren't sure about where the internet access you were using. Maybe you're at a coffee shop and you wanted to have secure surfing, but you didn't want anybody near you to see what you were doing. You could set up a VPN to some other company, not your company, but some other place. Could be your home, I guess, but most people don't run home VPN servers. So you subscribe to a service, you log in to that service, and then until you get to that service, everything you do is private, is encrypted. Everything you do is encrypted. Now, of course, in order to go out on the public internet, at some point you have to kind of be unencrypted and on the public internet. And that's what happens from that point on. So the reason I say you have to be careful is there are VPN providers who you know, snoop on what you're doing, they're worse than your internet service provider or the guy next door at the coffee shop. There are some who, you know, there's all sorts of potential problems here. You're putting a lot of trust in that company, aren't you? So I do suggest shopping around for VPNs. I use we've had, and they've been a sponsor in the past, Tunnel Bear. A lot of people love Tunnel Bear. What you're looking for is somebody who will have a strong privacy policy and be very clear about what they do and don't do. In particular, you want somebody who does not log access, is not keeping track of what you are doing on their site. That's important for privacy, I think. Otherwise, they could. There are, we've seen VPNs that would sell ads into your traffic. Like, you'd be getting ads because you were using that VPN based on stuff you were doing on the VPN. That's not very private. Now, I've mentioned before, I use a hardware VPN. It's from a Washington, D.C. company called Wi-Fi Consulting, and I've used them for years. They're a VPN product. Well, I get, what I do is I go to tinyhardwarefirewall.com, and they don't pay me, and this is just something I use. And you can buy little devices, some as small as like a little USB key, that will effectively act as a middleman between you and the Starbucks Wi-Fi. You connect it to the Starbucks or the coffee shop Wi-Fi, and then you connect to it, and it can interpose a VPN if you want. It also can give you more privacy with the Tor network and so forth. And I find these very fast, very usable, Tiny Hardware Firewall, so I can recommend them. They use a Hotspot VPN as one of their providers and Black Hole Cloud as the other of their providers, both of which I can vouch for. I hope that answers your question. Be careful reading reviews online unless it's a trusted site, because you really do want the right VPN. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Apparently, Tunnel Bear does do logging. That's too bad. That's a shame. Was there anything else you want to know? I had to take a break there, but I'm still here.
You kind of broke up there a little bit. I don't know if it's the connection, but yeah, I'm a truck driver, so I go all over the country.
Yeah.
And I value my privacy.
As you should. It's not even really just privacy, although that's part of it. It's also security, because when you're on somebody's network, they can hack you. I mean, they can do all sorts of stuff to you. So I think this is a very good choice. This works so transparently that once you set it up, as long as you're powering it, it will continue. So I really recommend this Tiny Hardware Firewall. I think this is great. It's about $91 a year, and the hardware itself is like $30. It's not very expensive. Here's the latest one. I love it. Looks like a USB key. It's a router. So you get an initial level of protection just by having it be a router, right? So any attacks hit that instead of hitting your computer, as with any router. But then in the settings, you can also turn on VPN. And theirs is very fast. I mean, all VPNs degrade the performance, right? Because you're going through another server or multiple servers. So if you can live with a lot of times people have a VPN and they don't use it because it slows me down so much. So that's something to keep in mind. But I love this because I carry this with me at all times because it's the size of a USB key. I keep it in my briefcase. If I am somewhere where I don't, I feel like, well, this might be a little sketch, I just set it up. And once you log into that open access point, it stays logged in. And you just, when you turn on your machine, it just uses it. It can have up to five other devices attached. So your phone, your laptop, all your stuff can be attached to that VPN. So that protects you that way, which is nice. It becomes a Wi-Fi access point.
Okay. What's the name of that again?
Go to Tiny Hardware Firewall.
Okay.
Tiny Hardware Firewall. And I do trust Wi-Fi Consulting. They've been doing this longer than almost anybody. They're very reliable, despite the fact they're in Washington, D.C.,
yeah,
that always makes me a little nervous, but I think that's just a who knows, maybe they were spooks and now they've come to the light side. I don't know.
Hey, whatever happened to your V mask that you used to have behind you?
The what?
The V man.
Somebody stole my V for Vendetta, my anonymous mask.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think I might have lent it to the kid for Halloween one year and not gotten it back. I got to find that. I know I love that.
Yeah, I used to, when I, and a few shows ago, I used to see that back there. I always wanted to get one of those for myself.
Well, let me see if it's on Amazon. V, just look for V for Vendetta. That's the original Anonymous mask. And see if the, let's see. V for Vendetta Deluxe. Nah, you want a mask. Let me see. I'm going to search for mask. Yeah, I loved that thing. Yeah, you can buy it for $1.59 on Amazon.
Okay.
Yeah, they make a lot of them. You know what? I'm going to get a couple more because you're right. I should absolutely have a V for Vendetta mask on my set.
Yeah, that's
thank you for noticing. It's kind of fun. I like to play with the stuff behind me, you know.
Yeah.
Keep it interesting. Hey, thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks a lot. You appreciate your time there, bud.
Anytime. Thank you, Manny. See ya. Yeah, it's the Guy Fawkes. Remember. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo. Now, see, there's some debate over whether Tunnel Bear logs or not. I guess according to their privacy policy, they do not log. So, yeah, look for a VPN. I mean, if that's something important to you that doesn't keep track of who's visiting the VPN or what they're doing on it, that's, you know, if you're using a VPN for privacy, that's certainly something you'd be looking for. And Tunnel Bear's a good one. Just understand, and I think a lot of times people think, you know, this is often the case with security. Well, in principle, this is a great idea. I'm going to go through a secure server. That way, somebody's snooping on my traffic, whether it's my home internet service provider or the coffee shop or somebody at the coffee shop, can't see what I'm doing. And I think that's a very good idea for a lot of security reasons as well as privacy reasons. But when you start using it, you go, oh, this kind of slows me down, doesn't it? And it will. It'll knock your speed down by half or more because you have to go to this server and then go out from the server. It's also why you want to choose a VPN company that has a lot of bandwidth, so you're not using slower bandwidth because you're using their bandwidth when you go out on the public net. In general, you know, I think it's one of those things, and I'm going to include myself in this. People think that's a great idea. I'm going to carry this with me, and then decide, I need this. I have the need for speed. I know I'm going to live with the lack of privacy. Remember that you don't really need a VPN on any connection that's encrypted. So if you see HTTPS in the address or you see that, you know, green padlock, that means everything going out of your computer to that site is encrypted. That's true of Gmail and Facebook, Amazon, should be every e-commerce site. So you may look at that and say, well, the kinds of things people can see, if I'm not using a VPN, it's, you know, minor. I'm going to just visit AAA. Or whatever. Increasingly, incidentally, sites, even our site, are using encryption, secure connections, just because Google's encouraging this, and they're right to do so. There's a movement called HTTPS Everywhere. There's even a plugin for that that really encourages that. And Facebook started doing it because there was an attack that they were vulnerable to. It was called FireSheep, and this was about 5-6 years ago. You could go to a coffee shop. You could watch the traffic floating by, including Facebook traffic. And you know how when you log in to Facebook, the browser remembers that, right? And you don't have to log in the next time. You just go there. Well, the way that works is the first time you log into Facebook, Facebook puts a little bit of information called a cookie on your hard drive and says, okay, this is Leo. Here's the cookie. And the next time you go back to Facebook, before it pulls up the login page, it looks to see, oh, is the cookie there? Is it recent? Because they expire it after a month or two, right? But, the cookie's there. It's Leo. Oh, we know, Leo. You don't have to log in, Leo. All well and good, unless somebody can steal that little bit of information, that cookie. And that's the FireSheep attack did that. It would catch that cookie as it was floating through the air at the coffee shop. And then the guy could log in as you and post stuff on Facebook. You know, embarrass you, use your account to do bad things and all sorts of stuff. That attack woke everybody's eyes up. And Facebook shortly thereafter started using HTTPS. When that's on, you don't have to worry. Because the guy, the attacker next to you in the coffee shop, he can't see the traffic. However, there are other things he can do. Even if you are on encrypted sites, he can mess with you a little bit. using hardware tools like there's something called the Wi-Fi Pineapple, for instance. A lot of hackers like this device. What it does is it sees people in the coffee shop, sees that they're online, can see the name of their computer, and sometimes can even see into, this is an example. I mean, you can do a lot of things, but this is one of the things, one of the examples that's nefarious that a VPN would protect you against. If given the moon in the right, you know, phase and the planets align, the bad guy might be able to see the names of Wi-Fi access points your computer regularly joins, like your home access point. You know how that works? This is why security and convenience are mutually incompatible. For convenience, when you get home, you don't have to type your password and log into your Wi-Fi account. It says, oh yeah, you're home, and it just logs you in. Your computer, all computers, have a list of previous Wi-Fi access points you've visited and will join them automatically. If the bad guy can get that list, and he can in some cases, he can get that list, he can say, oh, all right. Well, I see when Leo gets home, he automatically joins Linksys 43. So I now I'm going to use the Wi-Fi Pineapple, and I'm going to say that I'm Linksys 43. And by the way, I'm going to make sure that my signal is better than the coffee shop's, because you know what computers often do? They say, oh, I see a better signal. Oh, you're home. Your signal, it's so strong. Let's join that. And he will join the hacker's network. And at that point, the hacker can get in between you and all the traffic, outbound traffic. There's a long way around to say that there are other attacks that are possible, even if you're on secure sites. So a VPN, if you're in a shady coffee shop, if you're at, you know, Moe's Hacker Break Center, don't use a VPN. I'm always nervous about talking too much about security exploits, security vulnerabilities and flaws, because I don't want people to get scared. Well, I do want you to get scared, and I don't want you to get scared. I want you to get scared enough that you're smart, that you patch your computer regularly. You're careful about clicking links in emails or instant messages. You have to be a little bit wary, a little bit smart. But I don't want you to be so paranoid, so nervous. And I see this happen all the time that you just, I'm not going to use this stuff. I'm going to get off Facebook and I'm gonna stop using Google. I'm gonna because you can go so far, and then the internet becomes much less useful. You kind of tune yourself out of a useful tool. So it's a balance: security, convenience, and each of us has to decide how we want to weigh each of those. Are we willing to give up a lot of convenience to be more secure? Certainly, you know, in many of the things I do that. You know, two-factor authentication things. I will make it a little harder for me to log in, and I'm always kicking myself. Oh, now I got to go get my security key and plug it in. But for certain things, I really want to protect them like that, like my Google account. I really want to protect it extra. But you have to decide for yourself. So I guess what I'm saying is I'm going to give you the information. That's one of the things we do on the show. I'll give you the information. I want you to understand the risks, understand how this stuff can happen. But you have to decide, is it worth it? And I think most people kind of err on the side of convenience, right? We're all a little lazy. For instance, I know many of you, well, until recently, didn't have a lock on your phone, right? You pick it up and start using, because that's easy. It's convenient. Apple's kind of changed that equation. I think Google, too, because now they it's pretty hard not to have a passcode on your iPhone. They kind of make you do that. That's a good thing. But for a long time, the vast majority of people didn't lock their phone. They just pick it up and use it. And that's really, you know, somebody gets your phone, they get your life. 888-ASK-LEO. More calls to come. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. Michael on the line from Desert Hot Springs, California. Hi, Michael.
Good morning, Mr. Laporte.
Good afternoon. Thank you for calling. Hello? Oh, his phone battery died. I recognize that sound. All right, well, oh, are you back? There you are. Maybe you hit the mute button. Yeah, yeah. Oh, you're coming and going. Well, I tell you what. Let me put you on hold here, and we'll see if we can figure out what's going on. I'll get you back the minute we can get that working. Meanwhile, Kim on the line from Riverside, California. Hi, Kim. Uh-oh. Kim, are you there? You think this is my system? Not that anything would ever go wrong with a computer or anything like that. All right, I'm going to try one more line. Maybe it's just a coincidence, huh? Chris in Newtown, Pennsylvania. Hi, Chris. Oh, yeah, my system's down. John. All right, he's on it. The engineering team, Alex, the Flowmaster, has gotten to work on that.
Ah, there you are, Leah.
Ah, it's working. It's a miracle. Hi, Chris. Were you muted?
Hey, Leah.
Had you muted yourself?
Negative.
Oh, yeah, maybe we're having problems on our end. What can I do for you?
I'm to speak with you.
Nice to talk to
Long
you.
Long time back from DirecTV, the screensaver, wow. The call for help.
Wow.
Yeah.
20th anniversary of ZDTV, Tech TV's launch. 20th anniversary coming up in May.
Excellent.
Wow.
Excellent.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see that one.
Yeah. Makes me feel old.
don't let it feel that way. Come on.
What can I do for you?
Hey, Leo, I run a tech company out here, and I've normally been putting in Linksys routers to clients' homes to connect up to the home office. And I've been primarily putting in things like the Linksys WRT3200.
Great router, yep.
The W, I believe, 32X. And they were open source. Now, here I got notification from Linksys that there's bad firmware in the WRT3200. So, going back and forth with Linksys, I got these deployed.
You're a good tech guy, because I think a lot of people would just go, okay, we'll just forget about that. But you're going to go back to your customers. I love that. Thank you.
You have to. They were all getting the exact same issue.
Yeah.
So you're able to actually see the trend. I'm ITIL certified, so
excellent.
You follow the ITIL way of thinking.
Very good.
And I went back, and everybody started having the problem. So we get in touch with Linksys, and Linksys says, we can't replace them. So they're going to drop us down a model, which I thought was not the best thing to do for a client.
Yeah, no kidding. They're going to do it for free at least, right?
Yeah, but to drop you down a whole model.
Yeah, they don't make the old model anymore?
Well, apparently, you know, if you went to Staples, Best Buy, they all said out of stock.
All right, so they must have stopped. Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking. So,
does the firmware come from Linksys, or do they?
It does come from Linksys, and here's the thing. I had upgraded the firmwares with DDWRT.
Okay, good. That's the open source version of it, yeah.
Correct. Now, how they can have a firmware issue, but DDWRT carries over to it is beyond me.
Well, I'm just looking at a press release from a couple of years back from DDWRT. A good working relationship has been formed with Linksys. So, it's, you know, I'm wondering if it's a hardware issue. And, you know, they use a Marvel chip in there, which I don't think would be vulnerable to Spectre or Meltdown. But there are, you know, routers are a prime target for malware.
Well, this is what I'm concerned about. Now you got to now think ahead even further, because
yeah,
you would have even thought about Spectre and Meltdown.
Right.
You know, we thought we had it bad with the WannaCry.
Yeah. WannaCry, that's the one. I was trying to remember the name of the virus that it took advantage of SMB1 to spread. That was it. WannaCry. That's why Microsoft deprecated SMB1, because WannaCry used an NSA-exposed vulnerability to spread from computer to computer using SMB1. That's an old call. I'm sorry, but you gave me the name. I was saying Mariah. I knew that was wrong. WannaCry, that horrible ransomware that was going around last year.
It was just unbelievable.
So your question is to can you keep that hardware in place with an update?
No.
Or
here's the thing. We finally came up with a solution with Linksys, finally. And they, in turn, gave us these Linksys Velop routers.
Really? They gave you those? Because those are much more expensive.
That's what I saw.
Yeah, those are the mesh routers.
Available at Best Buy.
Yeah. So Linksys makes, once Eero and all these other companies started to make these mesh routers, it put Linksys on the spot. So they came up with their own version called Velop. I've talked to the developers over there. And actually, I think it's a pretty good system. I have mixed feelings about Linksys because, they make some very inexpensive, $30 and $40 routers. And they just never fix them. So that's always been kind of my problem, is that when there are security flaws, Linksys is slow to fix them. They're owned by Cisco now, so they at least have a very big company behind them.
Absolutely. And I think that, if you're Cisco certified.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, you have that too, huh? Wow.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. I started out with my CCNA and
nice.
CCDA.
Very
and
nice.
I'll eventually
got all the certs.
My way up to CCIE.
Nice.
It's one of those things you got
to
do.
Your clients are lucky to have you. Velop is a very, if they're going to offer those to you, I think that's a very good solution. One of the promises.
Now, what do you think about Meltdown and Spectre with these?
No, I don't think that.
These are new.
Yeah, no, I don't think you could have a problem with those. I think the real, they are ARM processors in there, but I think they're probably not vulnerable. There are other vulnerabilities. Oh, Cisco sold them. Oh, I didn't realize that. Okay, Linksys is no longer a Cisco. I think Velop is good. One of the promises of mesh routers, besides all of this, having kind of extenders and all of that that don't slow the system down, is that they will get updated frequently. You can't make, and I'm sure this is the case with the Velop, you can't make a mesh router that doesn't do automated updates. Contrary to the way it used to be, where you had to go out and get the update. You didn't even figure out that there was an update. So
supposedly everything's handled on the back end, yeah. And it's supposedly maintenance free.
Yes, so that's the theory. That's the theory. Well, yeah. There's two kinds of maintenance free. One, you don't ever do it. Two, the better kind is, I think what they're promising here, we will keep it up to date. We will push updates down. And certainly that's what all of their competition does, so I would expect them to do it. Belkin bought them. I didn't realize that. Belkin bought them a few years ago. So these are Belkin.
That's right. A Belkin return receipt came with that.
Yep,
you're right.
Belkin now. Not necessarily a bad thing. It's really comes down to service and support, and most importantly nowadays with routers, whether they'll keep them up to date. I think I would take advantage of this. Go for it.
Yeah, they're willing to replace every single one of them with two of them.
I'm impressed.
Two pack.
My suspicion is that they see this as an opportunity to expand their audience for the Velop. I think the Velop is quite good. As I said,
if anybody's having a problem with the 3200s, well aware, and that's what they're giving you.
These are tri-band 2, which is nice. I think that's a great alternative. I'm glad to hear they're doing that. They stood by you, Chris. That's good. And you, I'm proud to say, stand by your customers. That's even better. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, we got to play the disco because it's Dick DiBartolo time. He loves his disco. And this year he met a disco duck at CES. We'll talk about that in a second. Our show today brought to you by those amazing folks at Carbonite, the data protection experts for business. And I want to really emphasize that. We talked so long about Carbonite for home, but what about Carbonite for office? They've got high availability solutions, data migration, cloud, and hybrid backup together. And their newest solution, Carbonite Endpoint Backup. This is for businesses with multiple users and multiple locations. It helps you archive data and protect it and encrypt it without overtaxing network resources. In fact, it's the only endpoint backup solution with true global deduplication of encrypted data. They own the patent. That's how I know it's the only one. And because they encrypt, in order to do this, each file, not the whole file with one key, but little snippets of the file with each has its own key, that helps the deduplication, but it also means even if you were to lose a key, you wouldn't lose your data. It's really pretty amazing. And of course, with 2 million endpoints in each vault and as many vaults as your company needs, you can grow as big as you want, and Carbonite will grow right with you. Carbonite Endpoint Backup. Check it out at Carbonite.com. Dick DiBartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer, is back. He's also back from CES. I asked Scott, how many miles did you walk?
I walked in 3 days, 16.6 miles.
Horrible. That doesn't sound fun. Was it fun?
You know what? It's very tiring. And it's sort of like, well, I found nothing in this aisle. Maybe the next aisle.
There's always that hope just around the corner.
There's always the hope. I mean, there's a lot of wacko, you know, this, the connected water bottle.
Yeah.
So you fill it with water, you drink it, and then you look at your phone to see
it's
how
empty.
Much water you drank.
Oh, okay.
Oh, you know, it's half empty. I'm going to guess 50%.
It strikes me, and it's been this way for a while, but it gets worse each year, that they've run out of ideas. So now we're kind of at end stage technology. Now they're just mixing stuff together, hoping something catches on.
There was the connected saddle. I mean, maybe if you're a horseback rider, I posted that online, horse sold separately.
They actually had a horse on the show floor.
Yeah, it was a very life-looking horse, but it was a stuffed horse.
Oh, it was stuffed. Oh, okay.
A mannequin horse.
Okay. They had a duck, too. Wasn't there a duck?
Yes, Affleck, the duck was there. I was trying to get him to say the gizwiz.
That's just wild.
But he wouldn't. But I'll tell you, Lee, the thing that I saw, that I walked over to the Kodak booth, and I said to the guy, wait a minute, is this Kodak or a license? And he goes, Kodak. I said, oh, really? Where's your office? And he said, Rochester, New York. I said, oh, okay.
Then
okay.
You are Kodak. They went out of business.
So did I. And
now
I
they're said, doing so, Bitcoin miners.
Yes. Not only that, Leo, I said to the guy, why do you have the original Super 8 camera here? He said, that's not the original. That's new.
What?
I said, what?
What?
Yes.
They're making film
yes,
video cameras?
Yeah. No, film cameras.
That's crazy.
So it's the Kodak Super 8 camera. It takes those little cassettes that you and I 40 and 50 years ago bought.
OMG.
Now it has a flip-out 4-inch LCD screen so you can see what you're filming.
Oh, that's crazy. They're calling it the analog renaissance.
Yes. Yes. And, Leo, when you're done, you mail it back to Kodak. Now, it has an SD card in there, micro SD, because, you know, there's no sound on that. So there is a mic in, there's a headphone jack, and so you do the sound separately. But the price, I said to the guy, what does this cost? And he said, $3,000.
What? Oh, this is for crazy hipsters.
Well, he said, like, photographers want to work in film. Yeah, there are directors or. Well, now on their website, it says the film is $26 a roll.
Oh,
the
man.
Guy told me with processing, it's $100. So I don't know how that can be.
Oh, this is they're going to sell none of these. They're going bankrupt again, kids. That's crazy.
It's kind of bizarre, isn't it?
They say they worked with leading film directors in Hollywood. What? Nobody shoots a movie in Super 8 film.
Well, I the two guys that are big Mad fans that also produce their own movies, they actually produced a film for Kodak to show it at CES.
All right. Okay.
But I, you know, film schools, probably.
Yeah.
And I noticed on the website, it said if you are a film school student, fill out this form, and we offer generous discounts.
Yeah, I better.
Might be.
Well, go to gizwiz.biz. That's Dick's website, and you can learn all about the return of the Super 8 video camera. Just click the
Super 8 film camera.
I'm sorry. I keep saying video like that's film. It's not. It's film.
Film, yeah.
Film. The GizWiz Visit the Tech Guy. Click that button. While you're clicking that button, you might want to click the What the Heck Is It button for a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine, Up to 6 for the right answer, up to 12 for the best wrong answer. It's a close-up of a gizmo or a gadget. I don't know. Looks like, I don't know what it looks like. It's a, I don't know. Do you know?
Well, that's good. This time I do know. I remember I came home from a show one year and they'd given me something and I put it on and then I thought, wait a minute, what is this?
Gizwiz.biz. And don't forget, Dick's got a great podcast. In fact, you and Chad did your show from CES.
Oh, well, we recorded a lot of spots for our show.
At gizwiz.tv. Thank you, Dickie D.
Okay, buddy, take care.
Let's get one more call in before we go home. And we got Michael back from Desert Hot Springs. Is it working?
Hope it is.
It is. Hi, Michael. Oh, I'm sorry I had a...
Oh, what? I say, what? Me worry?
That's Matt. That's Alfred E. Newman. You remember. I grew up with Mad Magazine. It was such a thrill.
Me too.
Love talking
to you. Also, you're talking about coffee. The best way to make it is with a French press.
I agree. 100%.
Yeah.
Not instant.
Anyhow, I have a simple question. I have an LG Aristo, and when I go in and I go into Google and I get into a site that I want to be in,
yeah,
I start putting in information, it'll go blank, goes right back to the opening page again, then I have to unlock the screen and go back.
That's called a crash.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All the time.
The Aristo is an inexpensive Android phone. But one thing that you can do to maybe make this better, and I hate to say this, but what's happening is there's some software that's broken on it. Any computer will crash, and a phone is a computer. If it runs a program that's got a flaw in it, and the flaw can happen because a stray bit got set on the memory or whatever. So if the browser, the problem is you can't uninstall and reinstall the browser. That's part of the operating system. So what you're going to do is wipe the phone. I know. I hate making you do this. Back up all your data. You go to the settings.
How do you back up your data? I'm really new with this.
Yeah. So what do you have on there that you don't want to lose?
I don't care.
Then you don't have to back it up. As long as you're syncing your calendar and your contacts with Google, which most Android phones do, this is fairly painless. So you go into settings. Now, I know this is an older version of Android, so it might look a little different on yours than it does on mine. But you're going to look for backup and reset settings. And you're going to reset the phone to the original factory settings. And that'll wipe it. And let's hope that'll because it'll reinstall the operating system, that'll fix the problem with the browser. Because that's what's happening. The browser's crashing on you. Hey, nice to talk to you, Michael. Nice to talk to everybody. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time. Leo Laporte, The Tech Guy. Well, that's it for The Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security and Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.